Welcome to the Audition Hacker Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Knopper. I'm a percussionist in the Metropolitan Opera, and my goal is to help you figure out how to win an orchestra audition quicker and easier than I did. This is episode number one, and in today's episode, you're going to learn about how to hack auditions. I'll talk about my audition journey and how I ended up winning the Met audition. I'll talk about three examples of audition hacks that I utilize while preparing for an audition, and I'll talk about the one thing that's so much more important than the result of the audition. So I want to start by telling you about this one particular moment in time. You know that feeling when there's one moment from your past that stands out in your memory that's so clear, so vivid, so life-changing that you can close your eyes and feel like you're still there? Like you remember the smell from that moment, or you remember the song that you were listening to that day. This moment took place right outside of Juilliard, which is where I went for my undergrad. Actually, it took place on Amsterdam Ave between 64th and 65th Street. I can still see it now. I had just taken the audition for the Tanglewood Music Center. That's a big festival in Massachusetts where the Boston Symphony plays, and it's really prestigious. You get to hang out with members of the BSO and the Woods and drink all the time, and I really wanted to go. And the moment I'm talking about is burned into my brain. So it was me and my friend Kyle, who was a classmate at school. He is now a percussionist in the Boston Symphony, actually. We were walking north on Amsterdam Ave, away from Juilliard, going to get some cupcakes from Magnolia. And while we were walking, we were chatting. Basically, we both felt terrible about the audition. In that instant, we both felt like losers, even though we hadn't even heard the results yet. We were going over the audition and talking about every single thing that happened, as you do. What note stuck out in key G? Did I play soft enough when they asked me to play softer? What did they think? Did they notice that I missed a note in some other piece? Stuff like that. We were frustrated because we had worked so hard on that audition. We played for each other every day, we strategized about ways to stand out, and we basically went all in on this audition. And just thinking about some of the errors that we made were just disappointing. If I had to sum up the feeling of that moment in one sentence, I would say, I felt like every single moment that I spent working on that audition was a complete waste of time. And that is not a good feeling. That is a feeling that a lot of us, I think, can relate to because everyone experiences audition rejections and everyone deals with that sense of personal disappointment, especially in auditions. The topic of today's class is called How to Hack Auditions. I want to help you understand how making tweaks in your audition preparation process is the thing that can help you win an audition. But it's not just about choosing tweaks that you think are impactful and installing them into your audition preparation process. It all stems from this moment right after the audition. That feeling that you have is really what separates the players that end up finding success, the ones who advance, the ones who win a job, from those who end up choosing to do something else. It's this moment right after you find out that you didn't win an audition where you can react. You can either decide to internalize the negative feelings, and that could lead to practicing less or taking a break, or you can channel those negative feelings to motivate you to dominate and overcome whatever your weaknesses are. My preparation process is basically a long series of tasks and actions that I do between the day I get the list and the day of my audition, each one attempting to overcome some kind of issue or some kind of negative audition feedback that I have gotten. And the steps that make up my audition preparation process are all directly related to this moment right after the audition and the feeling that I had. When Kyle and I were walking down the street and feeling that disappointment, even though it felt negative and hopeless in a way, I noticed that somewhere inside of our disappointment and our reaction, there was always an undertone of, how can I improve that for next time? When I ended up winning my job at the Met, my ultimate audition preparation process was basically a long string of things that I had thought about in those days after the audition that I felt like might improve the problems that I experienced at that audition. It's not just a random or arbitrary set of steps. It was taking these moments and trying to convert them into actionable improvements to my process. Anyway, we both have good jobs now. I'm in the Met and Kyle's in the Boston Symphony, so I've mostly gotten over the disappointment from this. Well, I'm still talking about it, so maybe not. We'll see. So that audition was only about 3 years before I won my Met audition. How did I go from that day and all of the disappointment associated with it to actually being ready to win an orchestra audition? How did I come from growing up in a random town in rural Michigan and end up winning a big job like that? See, this rejection, this was just one rejection out of, like I said, 54 auditions. 54 auditions over 9 years. That's an average of 6 every year. And look, I'm supposed to be this great player in a great orchestra, but out of those 54 auditions, I was rejected 40 times. That means 40 times in my life, I prepared music to the best of my ability. I went in front of a panel of musicians who were judging me, performed my heart out, and 40 times I was judged to be not good enough for whatever playing opportunity was being offered. I was just a regular guy getting rejected over and over and over. But that also means that 40 times I had the opportunity to reflect. I felt the full frustration and disappointment. I evaluated what went wrong, what went right, and then I put my head down, closed the practice room door, and worked harder next time. And I had to do that part 40 times. My process itself evolved and changed over those 9 years of auditions, and where it ended up was this detailed, thorough, step-by-step, comprehensive process that I followed to prepare for my audition from the day I got the list to the day of that Met audition. That Tanglewood audition I told you about happened in 2008, but then 2009 to 2011 were the most transformative years of my audition journey and of my life. In 2009, I graduated from my undergrad in a flurry of audition rejections. I practiced so much. I skipped family events for audition prep. I skipped social gatherings. I skipped baseball games. I skipped out on time with my friends. I was constantly dealing with these negative emotions and feelings because of the rejections. And this happened over and over and over. In 2009 alone, I was rejected 11 times from auditions, from things as small as the Canton Symphony in Ohio to Tanglewood to the Kansas City Symphony. And remember, that was only 2 years before I won the Met job. So what changed between 2009 and 2011? Well, as I was auditioning and feeling all those rejections, something funny happened. After each audition, once I stopped dwelling over the terribleness of it all for a minute, I'd start reflecting on my audition preparation process that I had used. At first, I'd get a little bit exasperated because of all the parts of my preparation that weren't very good. But then I would choose one thing and just attack it. So here's how. I'd choose one aspect that I thought really sucked. And I'd start experimenting and trying a bunch of different possible ways of overcoming that particular obstacle. Take, for instance, how to be musical. And to combat that, I figured out an intensive solution for how to research excerpts and infuse that research into the notes. Or how I could use an intense self-recording workflow to solve a ton of problems in not that much time. Or various tactics to get the very best comments from people listening to my mock auditions, which in turn helped make my excerpts even better. Eventually, for each thing, I could figure out how to do it really effectively. I'd find some combinations of steps or actions that actually works and achieves the goal I was going for. And each of those solutions were successful now because they were foolproof. I could just apply the same steps over and over to all the different excerpts and trust the results. Eventually, what I found is that there is a repeatable system that works for me for every single part of the audition preparation process, from the very beginning, the day you get the list, to the very end, the day of the audition. If you find a weakness, there's a methodical way to address and eliminate that weakness. But it wasn't yet complete. In 2009, even though I was figuring a few things out, I was still getting rejected because even if you can improve certain parts of your process, if there are any weaknesses or gaps, then your excerpts don't come out the other side ready to win. A weakness in your process means a weakness in your performance, which means more no votes rather than yes votes. But like Winston Churchill said, when you're going through hell, keep going. Eventually, it started to come together as one cohesive set of systems. I started to fill in all the gaps in my preparation and find systems to overcome the remaining weaknesses that I had. It was like an assembly line. I could insert my excerpts into one end. They'd go through each of the stations along the way. I'd do the prescribed actions, and they'd come out like audition-level nuggets of music, ready to be judged. And as soon as it started coming together as a complete system, beginning to end, that was when I started seeing success. Back to the timeline, in 2010, a year later, I tested this process on some smaller auditions. I was advancing in some of those auditions and winning some smaller auditions. I was ecstatic because it started to work. The preparation was essentially complete and built on a solid foundation. I started to be able to trust that the work I was doing was bringing my music to a relatively high enough level. In 2011, I had the chance to test it on a huge audition when the Met Orchestra audition was announced. I invested 4 or 5 months into going through my complete system, and I won. Now, it's hard to really explain what it feels like to win an audition like the one at the Met. I mean, the moment I heard the result, I knew that it was a big deal, but the real effect happened over the next few days. It made me feel free, like this giant, massive weight had been lifted off my shoulders. This inevitable march of failure was gone, and it was replaced with this feeling like, now I can do anything. I got way ahead of myself. I said, I can have a family here. What school should I send my kids to? What's my local coffee shop going to be? Anyway, that's the feeling I want you to get to too. I think you can achieve it if you learn to prepare for auditions like I did. The reason I teach about auditions is because I used to be just like you. I wanted to win an audition. It was my life dream, and I poured every ounce of energy into figuring out how. But there was pretty much constant struggle along the way. I hate the idea that for any given struggle, you should have to go through it, even if I already figured out a foolproof, thorough way of overcoming it. So what are some examples of those strategies that I ended up incorporating into my audition preparation? In the next episode, I'm going to go over exactly what I did to prepare for my audition from the day I got the list until the day of the audition. Today, I just want to give you some examples of what do those strategies look like? What is an audition hack? The process that you'll use to prepare for your audition is extremely deep, complex, and detailed. You can start by looking at the big picture of your audition process, the bird's eye view, if you will. If you look at all the steps you take between the day you get the list and the day of the audition, you have a structure of what things need to happen to the excerpts. So do you start by organizing your schedule? Do you start by researching the excerpts and listening to recordings? Do you start in the practice room itself? What kind of metronome techniques do you use? Do you practice with a tuner? Do you record yourself? Do you play for other people? And even deeper than that, within each one of those processes, there are tons and tons of details about exactly how you go through that process. So if you're recording yourself, you know, how far away do you put the mic from yourself? How many times do you play the excerpt before you listen back? How many measures do you play at once? Are you playing one measure at a time, or are you playing one line at a time, or the whole excerpt? When you listen back, do you have some particular considerations that you're making? Do you first listen to rhythm and then pitch and then character or something? And then once you find a problem, what do you do about it? Do you record again, or do you do some other kind of practicing? These are what I call the micro details of your audition preparation process. Each one of them should be reflective of the types of problems or weaknesses that you have in your performance. They should be reflections of the kind of audition comments that you get. I have tons of these in my preparation process, but I also have a zillion things that I have tried and just thrown out because they don't particularly work for me. Let me give you 3 examples of audition hacks that I actually use in my audition preparation process. I'll talk about what they are, why I use them, but I'll also talk about why I think it's extremely important for you to start thinking about the micro details of your audition preparation process. Okay, the first audition hack. When I am recording myself, I place the mic at a distance. I try to place it at least 30 feet away from myself. It's great if it's in a big room, but most importantly, the mic has to be at a distance. The reason I do this is, think about it. When you're playing and you're doing traditional practicing, you know, you in a room with the music stand, just playing and trying to improve your piece, your microphone is your ears, right? And your ears are feet or even inches away from the source of the sound. If your ears are just 1 or 2 feet away from the source of the sound, you're going to hear every little tiny detail. If you're spacing out grace notes, you're going to clearly hear exactly where each one of those grace notes are. You can even play them pretty tight and you can hear them. You can shape a crescendo in an extremely subtle way. And because you're so close, you'll hear it clearly. You don't have to play it exaggeratedly. But if somebody's standing 30 feet away from you, they can't hear any of those clear details like you can. They're hearing a little bit of the direct sound straight from you, but they're also hearing the sound bouncing off the walls and coming back to them. They're hearing the reverb of the room, especially if it's in a big hall. If you're going to make a crescendo sound right to them, or the difference between two dynamics, or if you're going to space out grace notes for them, you should do it for somebody who's standing 30 feet away from you. That means you have to exaggerate it. You have to project those clear differences. If you're just listening to yourself, it might sound funny to you to play those grace notes so spread apart. But for somebody 30 feet away from you, that's what's going to sound clear. So instead of manipulating how you sound using a microphone that's 1 or 2 feet away from your instrument, meaning your ears, you should use a microphone that's the same distance as your audition committee. That way you can solve the problems that they're hearing, not the problems that you're hearing. That's the first hack, to place the mic at a distance when you're self-recording. The second audition hack. When you're playing mock auditions, you should only play for one person at a time. When you're playing a mock, you might feel like if you're going to do it, you may as well get a lot of feedback from different people. But the problem is that when listener A hears listener B explaining their thoughts about it, listener A will start to actually adjust their own thoughts. Their thoughts will be influenced by listener B. When multiple people listen to your mock audition, they influence each other's opinions as they're giving feedback. But when you're playing for people, you want to get exact, direct reactions from each person. Because your goal with these mock auditions, especially when you're playing for people, is in part to get their exact feedback so that you actually understand what you need to fix. And if one person is holding back because another person said it, then you might not hear clearly that two people thought you needed work in one area. You might not notice that there's a trend and that this one thing is really a problem. The goal with mock auditions is if you play a lot of them, you can start to understand the effect that your playing has on any given listener. And as you move forward playing for more and more people, you can start to adjust your interpretation to try to please more people. And so if you put two people in the same room listening to you, you're going to get altered feedback, influenced feedback. And so it's not going to give you the most direct data that you need to analyze and adjust your playing along the way. Okay, that was the second hack, which is playing mocks for only one person at a time. The third hack is when you're practicing with a metronome, don't practice on every quarter note. Practice with the metronome on just every downbeat. When you play with a metronome that's clicking on every quarter note, the thing that you're learning to do is to follow the quarter note. What happens is when you hear the quarter note, you slightly adjust forward or you slightly adjust back to line up with the quarter note. And then when you take the metronome away, nothing is telling you to adjust forward or to adjust backwards. You didn't learn how to play in time when you take away the metronome. You just learned the skill of following the quarter note. What's much more useful is to practice with the metronome on every downbeat. See, the goal is to build an internal metronome inside of your head, inside of your body, that you can trust and use to follow that metronome while you're actually playing without a metronome. You need to be able to trust that your internal metronome is accurate so that you can play along with that. By placing the metronome click only on every downbeat, you are forced to build that internal metronome click. What happens is when you're trying to play your piece, you'll notice that the click on the downbeat comes either early or late. And so yes, at first you're trying to adjust your internal sense of time. The only way for you to learn to land consistently with that downbeat is to build an internal trustworthy subdivision that's happening inside your body. Once you build that and once it's stable, then you'll start to land exactly in sync with the metronome when it clicks on every downbeat. And then when you take the metronome away, The thing that you need, which is an internal, trustworthy, subdividing click, is inside your body. It's already there. So when you're playing by yourself, even without a metronome, you can trust that your internal click is accurate and you can just play along with that. So that's the third audition hack, which is when you're practicing with the metronome, practice on every downbeat, not on every quarter note. So these are three audition hacks. These are three steps that I incorporate in my audition preparation process. None of these things by themselves are going to win the audition for you. These are all things that I had to install based on problems I was having in my audition preparation process. These are things that after the audition, when I'd feel that rejection, when I'd feel that disappointment, I would say, well, what can fix this? How can I prepare next time differently so that I never have this problem again? Here's the thing. Auditions are just a test of your audition preparation process. Every time you take an audition, you execute an audition preparation process. You execute a series of steps that you take leading up to that day. Even if your process is just something like, oh, I waited until 3 days before, I ran through everything a couple times and I just showed up, all the way up to, I practiced methodically for 5 months using defined workflows and effective, repetitive problem-solving methodology. Whatever you do, it's an assembly line for your excerpts. You put the excerpts in on one side and they come out the other. You make every decision about what happens to them from the day you get your list until the day of the audition. You choose the step-by-step process of preparing your excerpts for the audition. At the end, you have an audition, and that audition is just a measurement of the work you did. From now on, I want you to forget about audition results as being a measurement of who you are as a person or as a musician. If I could give myself one piece of advice on that day I was walking with Kyle and we were so down about the audition, I'd say this: audition results don't matter. What matters more is how you changed your preparation process from one audition to the next. Tim Ferriss is an entrepreneur and he's awesome. He said, there is no failure in experimentation. There's only feedback. Each audition that you do in your life is a new experiment. You know how you prepared last time. You know what your strengths and weaknesses are. All you can do now is try something new and see if it fixes your weaknesses. And then the audition tests your experiment to see if it helped or hurt. If you tried something and it doesn't work, you didn't fail. You learned a thing that doesn't work, and now you know that information. You're one step closer to finding out what does work. An audition rejection is never a failure if you're constantly experimenting. All you're doing is testing something new, and you're getting feedback on whether it was positive or negative, and then you try something else. Your biggest asset is not the auditions you've advanced at. It's not your resume. Your biggest asset is your audition preparation process. This is the thing that comes with you from audition to audition. The more you put into it, the more it grows and develops. And one day, if you keep putting more and more into it, trying new things, experimenting and learning new methods and trying it out on auditions, the closer you're going to get to winning your audition, to finding success and to starting the next phase of your life. That is how to hack auditions. It's to look at the audition preparation process like a game of trial and error. You know, you can do trial and error in the smartest way you possibly can, where you're exactly thinking about the problems or the feedback that you're getting and trying to imagine what tweak is going to fix that or what audition hack is going to fix that thing so that you never have that negative comment again. But in the end, it's only a game and you have to be willing to try all sorts of audition hacks, whether or not they're going to work. And you have to learn to be able to take a risk and try something new, knowing that it might not work, which takes patience and persistence. In the next episode, I am going to go over the 5-step audition preparation process that I ended up using for my Met audition. If you want to check out a rundown of that process and you want to print out a cheat sheet where you can go through the steps of that process, you can go ahead and get that now at robknopper.com/audition-cheat-sheet. This is a 5-step audition preparation process that you can use to prepare for auditions. It works for any instrument. I'm going to go over that in a bunch more detail in the next episode, but you can go ahead and download that early. Again, the website is robknopper.com/audition-cheat-sheet. All right, I'm going to close out the episode by answering a question submitted by the listener. If you want to submit your own question, you can go ahead and go to robknopper.com/ask and record a little audio clip asking your question, and you'll have a chance to be featured on a future episode of the Audition Hacker podcast. This is a question from Laura from Brussels.
Hi, Rob. It's Laura from Brussels. I was wondering, how can I keep on doing auditions and keep believing in it, even though it didn't go very well, or I was in the final a few times, but I didn't get the first job. So thank you.
Thanks for your question, Laura. This is a great question. First of all, huge congratulations on having gotten to finals in an audition. That's a big accomplishment. The fact that you've gotten to finals means that there are already many great elements of your playing. But just because there are a whole bunch of positive things about your playing doesn't mean that every piece of the puzzle is in place. When a committee is listening to you play, their minds are bouncing around from one element to another to another. At any given time, they might be thinking about rhythm or pitch or tone or articulation or dynamics. And if any one of those things, if any particular element isn't at a high enough level, then it's likely it just won't be enough to end up winning the job. But at the same time that a committee is listening to your playing itself, they're also listening through your playing. Your playing is a window into who you are as a musician, and who you are as an auditioner. Because the work that you do leading up to audition day is what decides how high of a level each of your musical elements ends up at. And it really is the details of your process that changes everything. Exactly what strategy did you use with the metronome to adjust your time and rhythm? How did you listen back to your recordings, and what considerations did you make while you listened? The micro details of your audition preparation process are the thing that you should focus on. So here's what I recommend you do next. First, you need data. You need the recordings of your previous auditions or the recordings of your mock auditions leading up to that day. You also need the data of feedback from mock audition listeners, feedback from the audition committee. You need to know exactly what you're missing or what elements of your playing aren't at exactly the highest level that they could be. Once you have that data, then it's a scientific experiment. You don't know what will fix those things, but you know that there's a zillion strategies that you could use to try to fix those things. And what stands in between you and fixing those things is just a series of structured trial and error. You put excerpts through different potential strategies, testing and listening back and documenting your data. And eventually the goal will be to find the new strategies or the tweaks in your old strategies that effectively fix the problem. Ultimately, the only way that you can test if this fix is truly effective is by going to the audition and seeing what happens. But if you really want to win an audition, I believe that the only way is by experimenting with tweaks in your audition preparation process. No matter how confident you are that your playing is amazing and your audition preparation process is perfect, if it hasn't worked for you yet, there are still tweaks and adjustments that you can try to make it even better. You've already gotten so far, Laura, that it would be a shame to give up and not try something new to see if that pushes you over the edge. And I'm so excited to see what you can accomplish by exploring the possibilities in your audition preparation process. All right, thanks so much for the question, Laura. And again, if you want to submit a question to be answered on a future episode of the Audition Hacker podcast, just go to robknopper.com/ask. All right, thanks so much for listening. If you like this episode, make sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, and I will see you in the next episode.